My name is Eric, and I'm an addict. Hey, Eric. And pretty much always start this off by saying the same thing. I'm very, very nervous when I do this. I am not a very outgoing person, not a very sociable person by nature. So to stand up here in front of a room full of people and to speak and to share, hopefully at an honest level, is something that doesn't come naturally or easily for me. I've been told to do things that I'm asked to do around here, and for the most part, I try to do that. So when I'm asked to do this, I kind of stand up and kind of jump in, like when you're a kid and you try to jump in the pool because you just got to jump in. So here I am. We'll see what happens. They did throw me a little bit of a curve on this. When they called and asked me to do the workshop, they said it was going to be on Traditions 8 and 9. So I was kind of prepared for Traditions 8 and 9. And then when I got here, the topic's actually service not self, which is similar but a little bit different. So I'm not sure how I'm going to work with that. I think I'd actually already decided that what I was going to do to talk about the ninth tradition was to talk about my experience over the years working with service boards and committees, so that'll fit pretty well. So anyway, I did look up the eighth and ninth tradition in the book last night just to refresh myself on it, and I'm probably not going to say too much about the eighth tradition, and I'm not going to feel too bad about that because that's the shortest chapter in the book. It's four whole pages, and it works how and why it was written by, the traditions portion was written by the trustees, who are supposed to be the people with the most experience with the traditions in the fellowship, and if they only came up with four pages, then I'm not going to feel bad about being pretty brief about Tradition 8. Tradition 8 is the one about NA as such ought to be forever non-professional, but we may employ special workers. The first part about being non-professional, Narcotics Anonymous is not a professional treatment program. Anybody who's been here for very long has probably already figured that out, but when you're new, that's kind of new. You know, when I first got here, I needed to hear that tradition read at the meetings because I was exposed to professional treatment programs, and I thought that this might be like that. You know, one of the things it mentions in the chapter is that we don't keep files on our members, and when I first got here, I thought that this was going to be like the psych ward I was on or the military I was in, and that they kept records and kept files, and this was a structured program, and they kept track of what I was doing and what I was failing to do. And so I was a little paranoid. I was coming off a year-long coke run, so I had a lot of strange ideas in my head. And actually, that worked to my advantage at times. You know, when I first came around, I had some trouble getting a sponsor. I had a couple of false starts with getting a sponsor. At my first meeting, there was a guy that secretary of the meeting, and so he was sitting up front, so I figured he must be like the president of NA. So I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, "Here's my phone number, you got to call me." I never called, so that was the end of that. And then there was a guy that sounded good at a meeting. He chaired a meeting, and he had 9 months clean, which seemed like a lot of time to me. 9 months seemed like a long time. So I asked him to sponsor me, and he said, "Well, I've only got 9 months clean, and I don't think that's really enough time to sponsor somebody yet." So that was another false start. And then about 90 days clean, I finally asked somebody who I knew had over a year because I'd been to his first anniversary. So I knew he had over a year clean, so I knew I had that covered. And asked him to sponsor me, and I figured they're probably keeping track of me. There's probably somebody somewhere with a file that says Eric has asked one person to sponsor him and never called him. Then he asked some guy with 9 months clean to sponsor him, and he didn't do anything about that. So this is his third shot. If he doesn't get this right, he might not be able to stay here anymore. You know. So, like I said, my thoughts were pretty strange. I was pretty paranoid, but it worked to my advantage because I started calling that sponsor. You know, I called him on a regular basis, talked to him on a regular basis, took his suggestions on how to work the steps, and started to make progress in recovery. But anyway, you know, where I started with that is NA is a non-professional program. This is not a professional treatment program. This is all volunteer. This is a program of addicts helping each other stay clean through the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. So it's non-professional. When I first came around, it was the late 80s, and there were a lot of treatment centers at that time. There were treatment centers on every corner. And a lot of people who came into recovery like myself, kind of unemployed and unemployable, got jobs in treatment centers. So there were a lot of people running around meetings that had jobs in treatment centers. And I can remember when I was new, I kind of had them up on a pedestal. I thought that maybe they knew more than everybody else because they worked for a treatment center. And that's not the case around here. You know, if somebody does happen to have a job in a treatment center, that's a totally separate thing from Narcotics Anonymous. You know, they may be skilled and they may have qualifications for that job in a treatment program, but in here in Narcotics Anonymous, they're just another NA member. You know, we have no professional members, no professional counselors. You know, if they happen to have a job like that outside, that is not inside Narcotics Anonymous. When I worked for a treatment center for a while, and I was the guy that drove the van and took them out to the meetings, you know. So if you thought I knew a lot about recovery, I was basically just the guy that drove the van. You know, that was my role as a professional in the world of recovery. So I certainly didn't know any more than anybody else in the meeting, you know, anybody else that was recovering and applying some 12 steps. We do have special workers in Narcotics Anonymous. We don't have very many of them. This is a Chesapeake and Potomac convention. I don't think the Chesapeake and Potomac region has any special workers. I'm from the Free State region, and we have one guy. We have a guy that works full-time at our service office. We have a service office up on Warwick Avenue in Baltimore, and we have a full-time employee that works in that service office. But he's not paid to be an NA member. He's paid to run the office. He's paid to run the warehouse. He's paid to distribute literature because it's a full-time job. You know, we can't ask somebody to volunteer, you know, 50 or 60 hours a week. You know, it's like you can ask somebody to volunteer, you know, a few hours to a service committee, sometimes a lot of hours to a service committee, but you can't ask somebody to work full-time for no pay. So we do have at least one special worker in the Free State region. at the World Service Office out in California. The last time I was aware of, which is some time back, they had about 45 or 50 people working in the office. And once again, that's not professional NA members. That's people that run a worldwide nonprofit fellowship that distributes NA literature throughout the world. So they're hired to do specific jobs, and they're not paid to be NA members, not paid to be NA counselors, not paid to be NA leaders. You know, the leaders are all volunteers who are elected by the fellowship. You know, the employees at the office are just that. They're employees who work for that office in specific job descriptions. So that's pretty much all I've got on the eighth tradition. The ninth tradition, and one of the things it emphasizes, and it works out why when I was looking at that last night, is it emphasizes that the first thing it says in the ninth tradition is NA as such. You know, NA as such, what is that NA as such? NA as such is home groups. NA as such is Narcotics Anonymous meetings, where we carry the message to the addict that still suffers. That's NA as such. NA as such ought never be organized. You know, the service committees and the boards that we create are not, they don't have authority over the groups. They don't have authority over the NA meetings. You know, the area service committee doesn't come to your group and dictate how you should run your meeting. They don't tell you what kind of format to use. They don't tell you, you know, how you should carry the message to the addict that still suffers. NA as such is not organized, but we may create service boards and committees in order to keep the home groups focused on carrying the message, in order to keep the home groups free from having to do things outside of carrying the message. We create service boards and committees to do things that would be too much for a group to handle. You know, if the group was responsible for taking all the H&I committee meetings into facilities, that would be a little bit too much for a home group to handle, for most home groups anyway. If an NA home group tried to put on this convention, they would probably be a little bit overwhelmed. It would probably not be possible. So we form service committees and service boards to do these things that are not directly related to carrying the message that the addict still suffers. We leave that to the home groups and let them focus on that. So that's going to kind of begin to give me an opportunity to talk about my experience with service. Service for me has been a big part of my recovery. I came into recovery with, I had nothing going on in my life except using. My entire life had gotten to the point where it revolved around getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. So I walked into Narcotics Anonymous. They told me I had to put down the drugs. I had a disease that was killing me, and that if I didn't put down the drugs, I was going to die. And I decided it was worth one more shot. I tried to eat clean many, many times before and failed miserably every time. So I finally decided to take it seriously, give this one more chance, you know, give life one more chance. So I put down the drugs, and that left a huge empty space in my life, a huge void. There was nothing left. You know, take the drugs out of my life at that point, and there was nothing. And I needed something to fill that up. And I filled that up with meetings. I filled that up with sponsorship. I filled that up with steps. And a lot of the time, I filled it up with service work. I got clean in an area that was really just getting started. There was a guy, I was looking through all my service stuff last night, kind of getting ready for this, and I had a copy of the newsletter from the month I got clean, and there was one guy in the area I'm from that had a hot 3 years clean. You know, that was the old timer. That was the guy that had the clean time. It was 3 whole years, you know, and everybody else had maybe a year or two. There was a handful of them, and a lot of us were just running around collecting key tags, and that's pretty much where we were at, and almost everybody was involved with service. Everybody was at meetings every night, and almost everybody who was staying clean for any length of time was at the area service committee. I was introduced to the Hospitals and Institutions Committee when I had about 90 days clean. I didn't even have enough time to do a commitment yet, but they took me to the H&I meeting so I'd be ready when it was time. And that's how we worked back then. We pulled people into service right away, and that's how we kept them busy. You know, that's how we kept ourselves busy, and that's how we found a sense of purpose. I became secretary of a meeting, and they brought a treatment center to that meeting, and we passed out key tags, and all these people would come, and they would get these one-day key tags and 30-day key tags, and they would be beginning their recovery. And I would give out those key tags at the end of the meeting and feel like I was doing something constructive for a change. You know, I'd been doing destructive things for years. I'd been hurting people for years. I'd been using and selling drugs for years and leaving a trail of destruction everywhere I went. And, you know, service work gave me a chance to turn that around 180 degrees and do something constructive and positive for a change. I jumped right in. I chased service work like I chased the drugs. And that was good for me. It kept me busy. It kept me occupied. It helped me to build some self-esteem. Pump my ego a little bit, which I needed. You know, I came in here pretty crushed and pretty devastated, feeling pretty worthless, and so getting some titles made me feel okay. And it really helped my recovery. At about 13 months clean, I got elected what they called ASR at that time, the Area Service Representative. They now call it RCM, Regional Committee Member. But anyway, I became the guy that went from the Area Service Committee to the Regional Service Committee, and we were part of this region at the time, so it was the CMP region. And I showed up at the CMP Regional Service Committee, And I really came to believe that there was recovery in Narcotics Anonymous at that point. You know, I came from an area where, you know, the fellowship was still pretty young. There was a treatment center in our area that still told their patients, don't go to Narcotics Anonymous because there's no recovery there. There was a halfway house in the area that was like one of the staple halfway houses, and they would tell their people, you're required to go to a certain number of meetings a week, but they have to be AA meetings. You know, if you go to NA meetings, that's extra. You know, your required meetings have to be AA meetings. You can go to NA, but that's, you know, kind of on top of what you're required to do. And that was kind of the attitude and mentality towards Narcotics Anonymous at that time. And it was when I first started going to the C&P Regional Service Committee meetings that I came to believe that there was recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, not just people staying clean, not just people getting some key tags, but I went to that committee meeting and there were people there with 5 years clean, you know, with changed lives. You could tell by the way they conducted themselves. You could tell by the way they handled themselves that, you know, they were different people. They were not the people they were when they were using. There was really recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. And that Regional Service Committee helped me to believe in that. And that was a big turning point for me. I was involved at a time when they were still working on writing the book, It Works, How, and Why. The C&P Regional Literature Committee was assigned the chapters on Traditions 10, 11, and 12, and I had a chance to work with them on that. The topic that turned out to be the switched-up topic this morning about service, not self. You know, I've never been one to claim that I did selfless service. My service was always partially motivated by desire to be somebody. You know, it's partially motivated by some self-centered motives. You know, it's like, I did it because it made me feel good. I did it because it helped me in my recovery. I did it because it was good for me. I got a chance to do service that turned out to be selfless. We worked a lot on those traditions, 10, 11, and 12 chapters. And then right about the time we were finishing up, there were some changes made in how the book was going to be written, and they kind of swept away what we had worked on and started again with the World Lit Committee and the trustees working on it. And there were some hard feelings at that time, but I won't go into all that. But anyway, you know, I did this work, and it ended up not being used. And so I had a chance to see work that turned out to be selfless, whether I meant it to be or not. You know, it's like the work I did was kind of swept away. But it was still good for me. You know, the fact that it didn't end up in the book, the fact that I can't pick up the book and point out stuff that's in that book that I wrote or that the committee I was on wrote, you know, it doesn't change the fact that I got something out of being on that literature committee. You know, I got spiritual growth out of being on that literature committee. I got connected to people in Narcotics Anonymous by being on that literature committee. I began to develop friendships and connections with people in Narcotics Anonymous. And service work has played a really key role in my life in that way because, like I said, I'm not a very sociable person. I'm not a very outgoing person. I'm not very good at connecting with people and making friends. And service work put me in situations where I had structured relationships. You know, I had to keep in contact with people I did service with. I had to develop relationships with them. And, you know, the more service I did and the more strenuous that service was, the closer people had to bond together. I eventually got involved with the regional convention, which was not something that I had really planned on. I was not a big convention chaser. You know, I went to the CNP3 convention in Bethesda. I just found that I was looking through my service stuff last night and found the program from CNP3, which was kind of cool. And I was here at CNP4 when they had the first one here in Ocean City. That's when they first brought the convention here in Ocean City, and it's been here ever since. That turned out pretty well. But I was not the kind of person who chased a lot of conventions. What happened for me is that in my recovery, I had to venture outside of Narcotics Anonymous at some point. You know, I'd become really good at service work in here. I'd become a good NA member. I'd become a good sponsor, a good step worker. I'd done all the inside stuff here, but I couldn't support myself. You know, I couldn't get and keep a decent job and make a living. And so I had to kind of go outside of Narcotics Anonymous and do some things there. And I went to school and got a degree at the community college and got a degree in accounting. And right after I finished that, graduated with this degree in accounting, I discovered that accountants are very needed and popular on convention committees because somebody's got to be the treasurer. And so they snagged me on that. They nominated me 3 times before I finally accepted, but I did. And that pulled me into convention work. And if you've ever worked on a convention work is very high intensity, very work intensive. It takes a lot out of you. And you really have to kind of bond with and draw close to the people that you work with on that convention. It puts, it brings people close. It puts strain on the relationships. You have to learn to disagree and get past it. And, I look at my phone book now, the phone numbers that are, actually it's in my phone now, not my phone book. I still have the little NA phone book, though, that I carry around with me. But the phone numbers that I look at there, if I was in a crisis, if the bottom fell out and I was about to fall apart, you know, if something horrible happened, if I was about to use, the numbers that I would be the first ones to call are people that I work with on the regional convention, people that I built those bonds with. Even though we've kind of gone our separate ways over the years, you know, they're still the people that I have the closest relationships with, the people that I would trust if I was really in trouble. And so service work provided that kind of relationships. I had a chance to be involved with the very beginning of the Free State Region. I was at the first Free State Regional Service Committee meeting, and one of the advantages to being involved with something like that is that you get a chance to see that the committees are created by the groups they serve. When you see the groups come together and create a committee, that really gives you a clear picture of how it works. Because when you first come around, or when I first came around, I kind of thought that it was from the top down. I kind of thought that you formed like an area service committee, and they went out and started groups. And it's the other way around. You know, when you have groups that become successful and groups that are doing well and need to come together and distribute literature and do phone lines and H&I, they come together and form the area service committee. And that's kind of why we have this bottom to top service structure that starts with the group and then goes from there to the area and the region and to the World Service Conference. So I had a chance to see the beginning of a regional service committee and to see how it's pulled together and formed by the people that they serve. The ninth tradition talks about that. We create service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. And so the area is directly responsible to the groups. And that's pretty simple. At the group level, it's pretty simple. You know, the group conscience is pretty basic at the group level. You've got, you know, one person, one vote, and that pretty much settles everything. At the area level, it's still pretty simple. You got one GSR for each group, one GSR, one vote. Nothing too complex there. Things begin a little bit more complicated at the regional level. You know, the regions are usually created by the area service committees, but ultimately every level of service is accountable to the groups. So now you've got an issue where you've got to decide whether you're primarily accountable to the areas or primarily accountable to the groups. And that can get a little sticky. In the Free State region, one of the things we did is that each year when we did the conference agenda report, we actually counted votes by the total number of groups instead of just the total areas. Instead of just counting up seven votes from seven areas, we counted, you know, 90 or 100 votes from every group that participated. And so we were directly accountable to the groups in the conference agenda report, but then when it came to regional business, when it came to the regular regional business meeting, it was just, you know, seven ASRs voting, and we were directly accountable to the areas. So you get into little complications like that, which gets even more difficult at the World Service Conference. I'm not sure how much I want to go into all that. And then it talks about service boards, which a lot of people never get exposed to. But that's another complication. You know, with something as big as a regional convention or with a service office, it's valuable in the world that we live in today to incorporate. And this regional convention has a convention corporation. The Free State Regional Convention has a convention corporation. And there are valid legal reasons to do that. There are reasons that that's worthwhile. And so we actually have, I was involved with, when I was doing convention work, I was on the Regional Convention Corporation. I was on the board of directors. And you have a lot greater level of delegated authority there, which addicts are not really comfortable with. Addicts are not really comfortable with delegation. Addicts are not really comfortable with the word authority. But when you've got a big operation like a convention going on, somebody's got to have some authority. You know, when you're handling the kind of money that's handled at a convention like this, somebody's got to have some authority. You know, somebody's got to make sure that things get done well and efficiently and that you don't lose money. And we learned that right off the bat, the hard way, really bad. The Free State 2 convention, which is the first one that I worked on, the last time I was in this convention center, as a matter of fact, was Free State 2. We left here on Sunday night $12,000 in debt with no idea where we were going to pay it. And so we learned real quickly right off the bat that somebody's got to make things run efficiently and somebody's got to be able to pay the bills, you know, because you can't lose money like that. And we eventually paid it all back. It took us about 6 months, and we had to reach out for a lot of help. It was a real convention that will live in infamy, but I was the treasurer that year, so I was right in the middle of it. You know, when I was going through my drawer of service stuff, I've still got the financial statement showing negative $12,000 at the end of the day, you know, and that's not a happy memory, but I do have the ones that show the bill getting paid. You know, we did pay our debts, we did pay the people we owed money to, we were responsible. So we proved ourselves like that. So anyway, you know, the regional convention, the regional service committee forms a convention corporation, and then for the most part, they elect board members and then delegate that authority to them. You know, and you have to have some level of trust. You really got to pick people carefully. And if you're familiar with the 12 concepts, you really have to apply some of the 12 concepts kind of principles there. You know, you really have to choose very carefully who you're going to put on that board and make sure they can do the job well and then trust them to do that. Because, you know, even a regional service committee doesn't have the time or the energy to observe and keep track of everything going on with the convention. And probably also as well with an office. I don't have any experience with office work, but, you know, offices that run full time, you know, definitely require more time and attention than you can devote to in, you know, an 8-hour regional service committee meeting once every 2 months. Now I'm going to try and wrap it up here in about 5 minutes. So I'm going to try and maybe choose one or two other things to talk about. Like I said, things are pretty simple at the area level. The area is accountable to the GSRs. At the regional level, it gets a little bit more complex because you're accountable to the groups, but you're also accountable to the ASRs directly at the business meeting. When you start dealing with the convention, you get another complication. You know, one of the things that we had trouble with at times was we had conflict between ourselves, between the board of directors and the convention committee. The board of directors had been elected by the regional service committee, and the convention committee was elected by the host area. And so you had some kind of unclear areas of accountability there. And especially when there were disagreements, when the convention committee wanted to do things one way and the board of directors wanted to do things another way, you know, we had some clashes, and you know, there had to be some way to resolve those. And when you're accountable, when you're elected by two different committees, it's tough to determine who's really in charge. And the board of directors really had to assert themselves. And once again, use that word that addicts hate so much, we had to exercise some authority, and we became very unpopular at moments. You know, it all passed and it got better, but we ultimately had to look out for what was best for the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. We had to look out for what was best for Narcotics Anonymous because we can't afford to be losing money on a convention and then going back to the region and saying we lost money. We need to use more basket money to pay off these debts. And that's not what basket money's for. You know, know, so we had to look out for what was best for the convention and the fellowship, and that's not always a good place to be. It's sometimes an unpopular place to be. At the World Service Conference, you run into another complication there. I was talking about how for the conference agenda report, what we did in the Free State region is each group got one vote. We counted every group's vote. But then once you go to the World Service Conference, you can't really do that. You know, every region gets one vote, you know, no matter how many groups you have in the region. When you believe in one person, one vote democracy in the fellowship, it doesn't always work out that simply. You know, even at the area level, if you're a GSR from a group that has 50 members and you vote yes for something and somebody else comes in from a group that has 5 members and they vote no, you know, they have the same weight. You know, the GSR has the same weight no matter how many members in the group. And the same thing applies at other levels. At the World Service Conference, you know, if you come in from a region that has 500 groups, you know, your vote carries the same weight as a new region that may have, you know, 10 or 20 groups. And so things get a little bit complicated there too. But ultimately, you know, once again, referring to the 12 concepts, ultimately, no matter what level of service you're at, no matter who you're accountable to, no matter who you're elected, ultimately, everybody's accountable to the NA groups in one form or another. You know, we can debate back and forth how that chain should work and who should be the links in that chain, but ultimately, everybody in any service committee on any board of Narcotics Anonymous is responsible to the NA groups, and our ultimate goal is to serve those groups and to meet their needs and to do what's best for the groups as a whole. And I think that may be about all I've got. I tend to be like that. Once I get up here and start talking, I get on a roll and I talk really fast, which you probably have noticed. Believe it or not, when I was new, I was much worse. When I was new, they used to give me the How It Works reading, the long one, because they thought it was hilarious. They would give me that reading and time me to see how fast I could go through it. And that is probably one of the reasons why I don't talk so much, especially in front of a group like this. Get me up here, and I'm a little wired, a little hyperactive, and that is, I really can't help it. I spent 4 years as a regional delegate, so I got to go to the World Service Conference, and I really drove them crazy there, because there they have people translating. So imagine listening to me talk and trying to translate into Spanish at the same time that I'm talking. Not a happy moment for the translator. So anyway, you know, once I get up here and get on a roll, I eventually reach a point where I just seem to kind of stop and run out of steam and run out of things to say, and it usually times out pretty well. And I'd like to thank the convention committee for asking me to come down and speak today, and I'll thank you all for listening, and hopefully I said something that was helpful to somebody and worthwhile to somebody, and with that, I'll keep coming back.
Next speaker is Karen.
Hi, family. My name is Karen. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hey, Karen.
Hi, family. I come from the Almost Heaven area. My home group is the end of the road. We meet 3 times a week, Sundays from 3 to 4:30, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7:30 to 8:30. If you're ever in Hagerstown, come and see us. You're welcome. You talk as fast as my brain goes, you know. I was sitting there thinking, I was like, wow, that's the way my brain be working. So that was a familiar spot right there, you know. I, too, was told it was tradition 8 and 9. I, too, went into the book, studied, you know, got myself studied up. So when I come in here, I would know what the heck I was talking about. Then when I come in and sign in, it says service, not self. So I'm going to try to combine both into whatever I say. I came in here in 1988, January 10. My sponsor told me to sit down. We're going to start with ashtrays, brooms, and chairs. That's going to be your service. That's what you're going to do. So I started picking up the ashtrays, the brooms, and the chairs. First she told me I was going to be the chairperson, and I was like, wow, you know? I got a week clean, and I'm going to be the chairperson? You know, that's the person in New York. You sit up front, and you chair the meeting. My bubble busted real quick. You know, I started putting up chairs and folding chairs, and I did whatever they told me to do. I was real grateful to be here. I was beat down. I was crackhead. I urinated on myself. I sat there with my period. I didn't stop using. My son was selling drugs. There was drugs in my house. I used, and then, you know, this music used to go on in my head, you know, dun, I went on hands and knees. He had stuff in my house, so I didn't really have to go nowhere if I didn't want to. But, you know, I was one of them cute, proud addicts that I used to get in my little gremlin and ride to Brooklyn or ride to another borough, get some drugs, and come back. And when that got tiring and I didn't feel like moving no more and I could, you know, you can't take another step, that's when that music would come on. And I'd go and steal all I could and come back in the room. And, you know, my mate was like, shh, don't take no more. And I was like, it's my house. So when I got here, I was pitiful, miserable, and I was glad to be here. So I wanted to do something. Nothing worked for me. I used to go to work. I work in the Board of Education. I used to go to work with the Bible. This is just what I used to do. And I used to put the Bible on the corner of the desk so everybody knew that I was spiritual. If you asked me anything, I knew what I was talking about. I knew the Bible. But I couldn't understand why I loved God. God loved me, but I couldn't stop smoking crack. It was amazing to me. I couldn't figure that out, you know. So I finally came to Narcotics Anonymous. I went to an institution, you know, in Manhattan, and I stayed for 1 week. And I'm grateful for that 1 week, but I didn't want to go home. I was scared. I was scared to go home because my house was active. My son was selling. And they told me to go to Narcotics Anonymous and make meetings. And I was like, that ain't going to work. So when I got out, I was looking for a meeting. I relapsed a whole lot, you know, because I already knew there was a place I can go. So once y'all tell me there's a place I can go, I'm a real smart addict. I had my Bible. I had my book. I had a book right away. I used to put the Bible. This is after detox. My man come home. He had the stuff. The Bible went under the night table. And I sit there, I said, because God don't need to see what I'm getting ready to do. Because I didn't feel right. But I had the Bible on the night table. I would read it, and I knew that one day that all of this was going to work for the good of me. You know, if I keep reading and keep doing something. My mother then was praying. My grandma then was praying. My neighbors was praying. My children was praying. Everybody was praying. One day I was going to get it. And he came in with the drugs, and the Bible went under the thing. And I mean, I came in here, and I felt like this big. Every morning, I would talk to my son. You know, he was like, Mom, you got to stop. You got to stop. And I was like, I know. I know. He was like, and then I said, are you going to get killed for me stealing your drugs? Are you selling for somebody? He said, no, he wasn't selling for anybody. So he was 18, 17 with his own business in my house. When I got clean, there was crack drying on the shelves. There was crack underneath the garbage bags. There was crack in all them 15,000 pairs of sneakers he had on the terrace. It was bags of crack. There was crack underneath the carpet because I didn't have a carpet that you nicked down. My carpet was, I laid it down. It was a remnant. I lifted up every corner. There was crack. I started praying. It was everywhere. And and I didn't know because, you know, when I did find out when I was using, I didn't know all that was going on, but when I found out he was a crack dealer, my rationale was, this is my house, I'm going to take whatever I want, because this is my house. You know, it didn't occur to me that we could all go to jail. None of that occurred to me. Anyway, I got into Narcotics Anonymous, and I was talking about God a lot, and how I wanted to be a vessel. And, you know, I thought about it one day. I said, if a bush ever spoke to me, I would be so scared. You know, I wanted a message from God. What can I do to show the gratitude that I have? Give me something to do. Tell me something. Give me a word. And then I sat down and thought about that burning bush and how if a voice ever spoke to me, I was going to be so, I'm the scariest person you ever know. I don't want to hear no voice from nowhere. You know, I don't need God to talk to me personally because I'm scary. And I don't need to do that. But I just wanted to know what I could do for Narcotics Anonymous. Because this is the place that got me clean. I did a lot of other things, man. I did a lot of other things. I said I was going to drink 1 year so that I wouldn't, you know, I thought that was staying clean. I drank the whole year. We were some crazy people. We were some crazy people. I was yelling off the terrace, you motherfucker, sucker, when you come home, you bring me a pack of cigarettes and da-da-da. And I was clean, but I was still drinking. When I came here, they told me alcohol was a drug. I was like, oh, I can't have a bud. I can't have a nip. When I came around, it was nips. It was King Cobra. I don't know if they still make that. And I was drinking nips. And at the end, my daughter told me I had 100 Heinekens on the terrace. I didn't have time to go throw them out, but I knew I was going to detox, so I was trying not to use crack. So I was drinking. My first service commitment was the NA meeting. You know, the basket went around. I wanted to know where the basket was. Could I be the treasurer? They said no. I said, okay. You know, they ain't let me be the treasurer. You know why? Because when I came in, I was asking them, I got some rent that's due. You know, I was like, my name is Karen. I'm an addict, and I got some rent that's due. And they was like, keep coming back. Yeah, keep coming back, baby. And I was like, they really ain't going to pay my rent. I'm sick of these people. Every night, I was like, my rent is due. They're going to put me out, you know. And then you know what they did? They took a collection up, and they got me a basic text, and they told me to go home and open up the book and read it. And I was like, oh. I said, these people really ain't going to give me no money. They ain't going to pay my rent because they said they help you. You know, they're here to help you. Just the newcomer's the most important person at any meeting. You can only keep what you have if you give it away. So I was like, well, my rent is due. Anyway, they never paid my rent. I didn't get put out. I became the chairperson of a meeting. And they opened up a new meeting, and they made me the chairperson, and nobody came. For 18 months, I opened up this meeting. Nobody came. And I told my grand sponsor was named Lewis, and his sponsor was named Will, and his sponsor was named Dot Tally, and my sponsor's name was Sharon Davis. And I still have Sharon Davis today. But we had all this family, and I used to go to call all of them up. I said, look, I got a meeting, and nobody's coming. What am I supposed to do? They said, open up the meeting. I opened up this meeting for 18 months, and nobody showed up to this meeting. Finally, one person came to that meeting. You know, somebody wanted to cry. I wanted to cry. I was so happy that person came. I said, now, this is the book. We're going to read it. If two or more call in his name, we having a meeting. Here, you read who, I read what, you read why, and I read the 12th edition. I was so happy, and I would call everybody. I said, Lord, I had a meeting today. They said, well, listen, when you go to that meeting every Wednesday, who made a meeting? I said, me? You know where you're going to be every single Wednesday. You knew where you was going to be. And that's the point. You made a meeting. And I was like, wow, this is deep. This is wonderful. Oh, this is wonderful. But anyway, my sponsor took me through the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And I went through a lot of service commitments in my time in Narcotics Anonymous. I went to H&I first because that's where I first got the message. Somebody walked in there. They had 30 days. And, no, they had 90 days, and they had jewelry and stuff, and they was clean. It looked nice. And I was this crackhead sitting in the corner about two. I must have weighed like, I could feel all the bones in my body and whatnot. And I just wanted to get clean so bad. I was so tired of using. I was tired of using, you know, and I got clean. And I said, I'm going to go right back to that place where I first came. You know, it was called Gracie Square. And I went back there, and I spoke to the people, and I felt like, you know, like I was lifting up off the ground. I don't know about y'all. I felt good all over. I was like, dang. And they was like, can I have your number? And guess what? When I made a meeting, one of them people showed up in the meeting. Just one, you know. In the detox, they told us that only one of us was going to make it. You know? And I was like, I'm going to be that person. I haven't seen anybody that I was in detox with. Not one person. I haven't seen anybody, and that's amazing to me. I've been here 22 years. I'm still waiting to see one of them. I probably don't remember what they look like on their names, but I haven't seen one person. I went from doing the home group to the H&I. Then I went into Rackers Island, Rose M. Singer, where they have babies in jail. And we bought a meeting in there. I had that commitment for about a year and a half. And I ran into this girl who was my girlfriend's daughter who had a baby in jail. And I went to them girls and I said, do y'all know your baby's birth certificate is going to say Rackers Island? You know, you don't have to live like this anymore. And a lot of them came into the home group meeting. A lot of them, man. But they had babies in jail. Can you imagine your baby's birth certificate to say Rackers Island? You know. Anyway, they had cribs. It was set up real nice for them and everything. But they craved the NA meeting because they knew something was wrong. Something was wrong with this picture. After the Rose M. Singer, my next commitment was Flowers with Care. It was teenagers. They didn't want to hear nothing we had to say. They said, that happened to y'all. You know, they used to get me after the meeting. They was like, you're old. I was 34 or something like that when I came there. They was like, you're old. As a matter of fact, I took my ex-husband there, and that's how we got together. I took him on a commitment with me, and we went to talk to the children, and one of them connected with him. And I thought he had something real special because they connected to him. They was like, y'all old, that ain't going to happen to us. We drink, we smoke cheese, it's from the earth, it's good for you. We don't even want to hear it. And you know something, I remember the attitudes. I remember being like that. My mother used to tell me my father smoked, and it led to other things. I'd be hiding. I'd be looking at her like, I ain't going to do nothing else but weed. You know, I ain't going to do nothing else. My eyes all red. I did everything else. I did weed, dope, mescaline, blotter. I did some dope. I ain't like dope because I don't like throw up and I don't like clean up that much. But when I got to the cocaine, I cleaned up my whole house and I was still alert. I didn't throw up and I found my love. I was in love. I need to tell y'all that I have a disease called lupus too, you know, and I came in here with the lupus and I lost hair. I lost, you know, the ability to move joints and all of this. And I had surgeries and after surgeries and my mother had lupus and I didn't want to have lupus. And when I had it, I got more. I just was a mess. You know, I was like, my God, why you give me this? But you know something? My mother had lupus on her face. She had like a mask on her face. I spent a lot of years fighting my neighborhood. You know, don't talk about my mother. Don't talk about my mother. Don't talk. I was a protection. Don't talk about my mother. You know, she can't help what she, your mother burnt. You know, they were saying things like that. But I got lupus, but I never got it on my face. And I'm in my 50s, and I still don't have nothing on my face. So I really love my face, you know. I ask God, please don't give me that disease, please. Because my mother slept all day. She was always tired. She couldn't do a lot of things. And I hated her. I said, but she can't do nothing. But anyway, when I got it, now I know why. And today, they got medicine for it. I don't look like I got nothing. I change my hair if I want, like, the weather. And I'm okay with that, you know. But my mother didn't want to wear wigs. She didn't want you to see her head. She had a wig to go to bed. She had a wig to open the door when the Jehovah's come. She had a special wig. She had a wig to go outside. She had a wig to go shopping. Each one had a scarf on it. It had something on it. And she wore these shades like you couldn't see the rash on her face. She wore these dark green shades with the points. You know, I remember all of this. I love my mother, but I just didn't like none of that stuff that she did. But recovery has allowed me to face this and you know, accept that this is a part of my life. When I was using, I didn't accept nothing. You know, my first man bought me a wig. I wouldn't wear the wig. I'd wear a kufi and hair. I curl hair down there. Had none up there, but I'd wear the kufi, and I'm gonna wear my hair. My hair was curled. Beautiful, but I wasn't going to accept the fact that one day I would have to wear wigs because I remembered what my mother did with them wigs. And she hated herself, you know. And I got into recovery and they had a mother-daughter thing and she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't do it, you know. She wouldn't do anything having to do with this disease, lupus. But I'm grateful today because, you know, I got y'all and I got traditions and spiritual principles. And if it was, service saved my life. I'm trying to get to the point that service saved my life. After I did the commitment for the Rose M. Singer, I went upstate and spoke in Saratoga, New York, about illness and recovery. And in them days, it was about AIDS. And everybody thought I had AIDS because I was going up to speak about illness and recovery. And I spoke about lupus, and I was freed. I was freed. I was up there talking about I had a man that I didn't think was going to love me because I was losing my hair. And then he started going bald. One day I looked, and, you know, he's leaning down, he's a DJ, he's playing music, and I seen like a shiny area over there. I said, wow, God is awesome. God is awesome. God is awesome. And you know what? His hair was going, and I still loved him. That was just telling me, you know, he gives me all I need. The next commitment after that with the children, what was I doing out? Man, I got to go back so far. I was in area. I was doing everything. Anyway, I got married in recovery. I lost my mother. I lost my father. I lost my mother-in-law. I lost my father-in-law. I lost my grandmother. I lost my son. It got so bad. This was like in a matter of, my son was later, but in a matter of 2 years, I lost six people. And the people, and at my grandmother's funeral, the funeral director went up and checked her body and sat in the first row and died. He slumped down, and we always wonder what happened to him. Anyway, he died. And everybody in the fellowship was like, don't come near us, because every time y'all come near us, somebody freaking dying.
Oh my God.
And when my mom died, I got a sponsee sitting there. What did we do? We went to a meeting. As soon as she died, we went to a meeting. Come on, Karen, I'm going to take you to a meeting, because that's what you need to do. That's what the fellowship tells us to do. Go to a meeting, and that's what we did. And I went to a meeting, and I cried and whatnot. But I got to that funeral, and my sister and brother looked at me, and they said, who the hell do you know? Who do you know? Because the Narcotics Anonymous came out like the feds, man. They was coming around, and they didn't hug my sister, and they didn't hug my brother. They went down and hugged me, and then they hugged my daughter, because they knew us. And then they went around. All they did was show their respect. My sister's still saying, who the hell do you know? I said, I'm in a society, a fellowship of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We meet regularly to help each other stay clean. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to take these steps, come and see what we do. My brother said, man, he's a drunk. He lives in Woodbridge. My sister's anorexic and she can't hear, so she can't talk to me. She can't talk to me because she can't hear. I have to write to her. But anyway, we don't communicate since my mom died. But anyway, they came out, and to me, that was like service. They came out, and they supported me. Last Saturday, we lost a member of our home group in Hagerstown, Maryland. And my grandkids had a birthday the same day. And I love my daughter because that's all I got. I chose to support my home group, or one of my home groups. I got more than one, I'll tell you the truth now. But I chose to support the death, to go to the funeral for this woman because of what they did for me in 1993. My mother died in 1993. And I have never forgot how y'all came out. So I said, I'm going to suit up, show up, and I'm going to be one of those members. Because that woman sat in one chair. 12 years she was there, and she's just sat in that chair. And we'd be like, why you sit there? And we live in an area where there's a lot of detoxes or recovery houses and people coming out of jail and whatnot. So they running around, you know, in the back of the room, they in and out, in and out, in and out. And she sits right back there. And somebody asked her, how could you just sit there and they making all that noise? She said, it bothers me. She said, love them and fuck them. She was an old woman. Oh, Miss Betty. But Miss Betty said that, and she was like, you got to love them. You just got to love them. And that's where I come from. I mean, I'm not one of those shy people. God put me smack in here. I ain't never been shy. My mother's always been in service. She ain't never knew Narcotics Anonymous, but she was always there for the neighborhood. She was one of them women that I couldn't stand her. She let everybody in. The Carnet man, you need to use our phone. Come on in. Like, you don't know them people. So if you see me and you see the way I am, I'm a product of her. You know, no matter how I try to remove myself and get some principles and stay in focus, you know, I'm still my mother's child. And I loved her. But I got married and I got divorced. I got married after 10 years of recovery. And I was chairing a meeting. I was always doing something in Narcotics Anonymous. I've never been here and not do anything. I've been a treasurer. I've been a secretary. I've been the area. I've been a, you know, H and I. Now I get divorced. I move to Hagerstown. I call it Hagertucky. I moved to Hagerstown, Maryland. Didn't know anybody. Looked online and it said Almost Heaven area. I said, sound like a place I would like to be. Almost Heaven. I moved down there because I got divorced and, you know, I have relatives and I liked the way they was living and I liked the amount of rent they paid. And when I went to see the apartment that they called me for, I was fighting the blessings. I I don't want no three bedrooms. They said, Miss, we got an apartment for you, and if you want it, you better come now. But I don't need three bedrooms. I want a handicap. I want a plug. She was like, Miss, we have an apartment for you, and you will pay the same rent you would pay if you had one bedroom. You don't need a handicap unit because you got a driveway. I said, okay, you know. I hung up the phone, and I called a couple of people. They was like, that's what you prayed for. You need to get out of New York. You need to get out of all everything and go there. Soon as I hit town, this is what I'm getting to. Soon as I hit town, my friend named Eva asked me to go to a special events meeting with her in the Lighthouse in Martinsburg. I ride there with her. No sooner than I get there, the chairperson of special events looks at me and says, do you have a commitment? How much time you got? You need to be the chairperson of special events. I've been doing this for so many years and da 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 da. And guess what? I'm the chairperson of special events. I ain't never thought about me in no special events or anything. But I have been in service. But God gives you what you need. This is what I'm trying to say. Because I came down here, I didn't know what I was going to do. One of my exes, he asked me, what you going to do down here? I said, live. What else am I going to live? I'm going to make meetings. I'm going to plug in. When I went online, I said, almost heaven there. That sounds real good to me. And I went on the internet, got me a meeting, went straight to the first meeting. I didn't get, I moved in first. And I said, okay, now I'm ready to make my first meeting in almost heaven area. And me and my neighbor, we always be sitting on the porch talking about, this is paradise. She from New York, too. She from Coney Island. She said, we live in paradise. I said, yeah, look at the clouds. Smell the doo-doo. Oh my goodness. Anyway, we were supposed to be doing tradition 8 and tradition 9. Tradition 8. What is it, Eric? Say that again.
Forever non-professional, we can have special workers.
That's 8?
Yep.
My card is anonymous, must remain forever non-professional. But our several centers may employ special workers. I done took so much medicine in my life, I'm a doctor. You know. Narcotics Anonymous knows better. They laid down them traditions a long time ago because they knew who was coming. The doctors who take all the medicine, the lawyers from the jail, and I read all the books. I did my divorce. I was going to do my own divorce. I had went to the court. I got all my papers and stuff. I said, this is how I worked the tradition in my life. I was going to do my own, you know. And then after a while, it got real complicated. I am not this organized. I need to hire somebody. I need to get somebody else to help me do what I need to do. So I got me a lawyer. But anyway, we had a congenial divorce. So I really didn't have to go pay that lawyer. But I did all that. I mean, I went like 6 months. I had paper up to here. I still got the paper. I'm going to throw it out soon. You know. That's one incident. The other incident, I wrote it down in my book. When I got sick, when all them people was dying, I was reading all of the stuff at the funerals and whatnot. People was asking me how I was doing. I said, oh, I'm all right, 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 I'm all right. And one day I said, I was driving my car into the back of this man's car because I wanted him to hurt like I was hurting. And the only thing I thought that he cared about was that car. So I took my, Impala? What I had, a Chevy Malibu. Malibu. I was driving that Malibu in the back of that Jimmy Jeep. Boom. Boom. Because he wouldn't stop. So I said, boom, next stop sign, I sprang into him. So I finally, he lost me and whatnot. And I didn't do much damage, but the damage I did, my stepdaughter told me she really did it, but I thought I did it. I was so ashamed. But I went and got me some help. I went and got a therapist. She put me in the crazy house. She told me you need a little bit of help. I was going to all of these funerals talking about I'm okay. I was not okay. I was not okay. I was in a whole lot of pain. I don't deal with death very well. You know, I don't ask for help very well. I've been here a while and you know, I'm learning how to ask for help. But I did ask for help in my journey. But we should remain non-professional. This room right here, all Narcotics Anonymous meetings do is carry the message. We can't be doctors. We can't be lawyers. We can be in here, but our fellowship is not going to allow us to take over the meeting. You know, you can be a lawyer and sit in here. But in Narcotics Anonymous, we're all addicts. And I like that. I can rub noses with people who got degrees and people who just came out of the shelter. You don't know who's who around here, and it don't really matter. If you used and you in pain and you want to recover, you make a meeting. All the requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. The ninth tradition, we may have service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. We are those who they serve, the meetings. And this is a committee. The convention is a committee. They got together, they planned some things. Because if we was in a meeting and we had to do all of this, a business meeting is even a committee. A business meeting is not a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It's a business meeting to take care of the business of the meeting so that when we in the meeting, we can take care of the business of carrying the message to the addict who still suffers. You know, that's a committee. A secretary, we need, like, I'm in special events. I make flyers. I'm getting tired of making flyers. We're going to have to go and hire a place to make some flyers. You know what I'm saying? We go buy our tickets somewhere else. We can get other people to do things for us. We cannot be in charge. The spiritual principle of the second tradition, there's only one ultimate authority, a loving God who may express himself in our group consciousness. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. In order for us to keep God in our fellowship, that's why we have 8 and 9. That keeps God in it and us out of it. Because we can be in everything. We're some smart people. We are very intelligent people. And we want to run everything. Everything. I'm talking about all of us. I ain't just talking about me now. We smart. We doctors in here. We medicate people. We tell people what they should take and what they don't. Look, I got some Tylenol, and you need to go get something for your urinary tract infection. You know, we know everything. Well, you need to take. You need a writ for this, and you need to do that. And I'm gonna do your taxes. I used to do people's taxes till my best friend in recovery. She was mad because it was $30 short. I messed up. And she wasn't even paying me. She said, I was supposed to get $490 and I'm only getting $450. I was really upset because I was going to plan on buying something. And I said, you ungrateful so-and-so. But you learn. I am not a professional. I don't need to be doing your taxes. I don't. But I'm smart. And I can do it, you know. But the traditions are teaching me in my life. They said to practice these principles in all your affairs. You can practice all the principles in all your affairs. It will show up. It will come clear to you if you do your step work and you do your traditions. Every so often, something like, bang, a light bulb goes off. And this applies to that tradition, or this applies to that one, you know. And just keep coming and keep doing what you're doing. My suggestion is, if you can do something for somebody else besides you, because it ain't about me no more. I still think it's about me sometimes, but it ain't. Do something for somebody else. Get the gratitude in your attitude. It's a good feeling to do something for somebody else. I'm here to tell you. And I'm going to tell you how it ain't about me, and I'm going to shut up. Coming down here, I came down here with 2 sponsees. I didn't pay for the room. I came down here to speak. Somebody else was supposed to be doing this. But Rashima called me and told me that they called and canceled. And me and my big mouth had told her early on, if you need me for anything, anything, let me know. I already secretary in a meeting at 1:30. But she called me back. She said, somebody canceled for tradition 8 and 9. Can you do it? And I said, yeah. So I thought it was a nice opportunity to spend the night with my sponsees and do some work, because they both on the 4-step. And we get down here, and the moment we get down here, they call their men. They men come down, and we all in the room together. No step work, no. I can't even read my 8 and 9 traditions so I can get ready for this meeting and be the best I can be. You know, I'm ironing in the dark last night, so I don't look like you. I don't know who did it and left. But see, it ain't about me. God was laughing at me. He was like, you gonna accept this tonight, because they coming. They coming so far that they have to sleep with us, and we got room. We got room. We got a suite. We got a beach area in the back. We got a living room. We got a kitchen. We got room. But it was about me. I was pissed. I had to share with another recovering addict. I really was pissed. Then I went to the mother, get my spiritual juice. It ain't about me. It ain't about me. I came down here to do what I'm doing. All that other stuff I planned was planned. That's all it was. And, you know, I feel good when I do something selfless. I feel much better. I feel good all over. And if you want what I got, and you want to feel like I feel, hey, do what I do. Get yourself in service, any kind of service. The Hug Squad is service. Showing up at a meeting and sitting there is service to me. Because you ain't had to be there, and you ain't had to raise your hand and share and give me nothing. You know, so you could, there's all kinds of service, you know what I'm saying? And I love this fellowship because it saved my life. It let me know who I am, what my shortcomings are, what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. I'm not good at a lot of things, but I can talk. But I'm telling you, man, you went through that stuff so good. I mean, I was like speechless. There ain't nothing else I could say, but see how God worked? He said, tell your little story. Everybody got one. I'm just grateful to be here. I've been here 20-something years, and I plan to die here. I used to say I wanna die clean. Now I say I'm gonna die clean. The only way I'm gonna die dirty is if you put something in me. Okay. Oh, I looked at the wrong person. I heard your story. And with that, I'd like to thank the committee. I'd like to thank the convention committee for even having me. And I'd like to thank the higher power for introducing me to people like Al, who introduced me to people like Rashima, who introduced me to people like Tony. And give me sponsees and give me a sponsor that's not here today, and I don't have a resentment about it, and I still love her. Sharon Davis of New York is my sponsor, and I love her to death. And thank you for letting me share.